But anyway, we're really just glad you're here. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm just so glad that you could be with us today. You might have noticed coming in that we've got some kind of decorations, some flowers and tablecloths and all the rest. That's just someone in the church wanted to help set up the series a little bit for you. We're taking this week and next week to just kind of do a little mini-series called Go Home, looking at how you and I can tell our story in our own backyard. And so here's the point of this. Summer's here. I think you might all be aware of that. I don't have air conditioning in my car, so I'm very aware of that. And just this last week, I drove from my house basically to the office, and everyone thought I had run a marathon through the desert. It's pretty sad. Everyone thought something tragic had happened to me. It was just driving in and sweating so bad that it happened to me. But what happens in the summer here is lots of stuff. We live basically in paradise, which means people who aren't even really our family travel in, lie that they are our family just so they can stay in our home and hang out in our town. You're going to get lots of people showing up, friends, family, people you didn't even know about. We do lots of cookouts, and sometimes we do barbecues, which are two radically different things. And so if you're not from here and you invite us to a barbecue, we'll all come. And if you don't serve a pig, we will all leave disappointed. They're two different things, but we do both of those things. We're always, you know, going out the boat or hanging out at shack or, you know, private other little islands we don't want anyone to find out about. This is the kind of stuff that happens, and usually what it leads to is lots of opportunities to talk about whatever. And hopefully, occasionally, we get to kind of talk more about what's really going on in our hearts and what's going on in our lives. And so we want to try to equip you for those conversations. Our goal every week is to be super practical so that what you're hearing, you can right away just apply it to your life. And so we want to help equip you through that and just to encourage you that summer, while it's exciting and it's fun and it comes with all these great opportunities, it's not a break from mission. God's not on vacation, so we don't get to take a break from living for Jesus. And so that's kind of the point of this little series. So let me talk first about kind of where this can typically go wrong. When you and I, when we get a chance to talk about what we believe or church or Jesus or anything, let's just run through a few scenarios, because I think for a lot of us, this doesn't always turn out like we hoped it would. And if you're like me anyway, we don't necessarily always see the results we're hoping for. I mean, and some of you, you try to share what's going on in your heart and life. It doesn't really, sort of make sense to people. Maybe you're here and no one ever asks you about why you live the way you live. And just a possible scenario, maybe no one wants to be like you, and so they don't have any reason to ask you why you do what you do or believe what you believe. Maybe for some of us, we're just nervous. I don't know. I think there's also a group of people who feel like that's not necessarily what your job is, that it's actually my job. And you might be thinking to yourself, it sounds like that's what we pay you to do. There was someone who brought a visitor one time to church who they really wanted they wanted this person to give their life to Jesus. And so they told me about this in the lobby before the service while this person was standing 2 feet away. And then that's already a little awkward. And then once they came inside here, they basically put all this pressure on me. And during the sermon, I looked out and I saw the person sitting next to their friend they'd brought, and they were literally doing this. They're going, like pointing to the person, right? In the middle of the sermon, like kind of doing this whole like, you know, like they're right there, you know, kind of thing, which was very awkward because the person could see that. So could everyone else. It was just incredibly awkward. So if that happens, please don't do that. It's awkward for me. It's awkward for them. It's awkward for everybody. But all this kind of goes into making this difficult. And so I'm not the expert. I'm not great at this either. Sometimes being a pastor makes it hard. Because the moment people find that out about you, they assume a whole lot of other stuff. They assume I'm going to like show up at their house with like an offering bucket or all kinds of whatever. But I'm working through this too, and we're going to try to make this really practical. And if you don't have any problems with this, if you're like the next Billy Graham, bear with the rest of us lowly sinners as we talk about how this can sometimes be difficult. I think for a lot of us, we don't think our story is that great. That's one of the things that's hard. Our testimony of how, you know, we got saved or, what Jesus did didn't involve, our heads spinning around and projectile vomiting and all the rest. And so it doesn't seem really that much of a story to tell. On the flip side, some of us may feel like our story is too crazy. You know, we don't want to give kids nightmares, and so we don't really want to tell what really went on in our hearts and lives. Or maybe your story was really bad. You were, you know, just, you know, kind of really bad as far as like strung out and whatever the case may be. And you've changed to the point where you don't want people to really know what you used to be like. So maybe that's caused a bit of a problem for you. I think sometimes with those crazy stories, we tell other people's stories, right? We've so sensationalized, you know, the drug addict, for example, who gets saved and all those kind of, you know, scenarios, that those are usually the stories that we talk about. You know, when we're going to talk about what Jesus has done, we look for what, from our standpoint, what looks like the craziest scenario, and we only tell those stories, which leaves people to think that if they don't have that kind of a crazy life going on, they don't really need Jesus. That only people with that kind of lifestyle need Jesus. Some of us don't tell stories at all. We tell facts and data. And so it's like we tell like apologetics, like we have all the right answers to all the tough questions. We're ready to duke it out, you know, over, you know, a hamburger in the backyard about, you know, how we know the Bible's true or something. And then some others of us will use like formulas, like, you know, the four spiritual laws or whatever the case may be. And there's verses in the Bible that allude to that. 1 Peter 3:15 says that we should always be prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks for the reason, for the hope that is in us. And then he adds, yet do it with gentleness and respect. Usually what goes wrong here is we forget that it's actually about a hope that's in us. We just get aggro and we just want to defend our what we believe, and how dare you say that what we believe isn't true. And then we totally just chuck out gentleness and respect, right? And so that's helpful if that's where you land on that one. Yet more of us will tell a story but tell the wrong story. And so what I mean by that is somebody asks you, why do you go to church and why do you believe in Jesus? And kind of under the pressure, you don't want to look bad. And so you say things like, you know, I used to have a bad temper. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I just had to get my act together. I just want to clean myself up. You know, we basically make ourselves out to be the hero, the initiator, you know, and the hero. And kind of it leads people to either really feel like, wow, man, what a great guy. Wow, he just really took charge of, you know, his own, you know, he's making his life better. Or people go, man, I could never do that. I could never clean my life up, you know? And the reality is that's not the story, right? Because the story is about Jesus. It's not about us. But when we tell it like that, it leaves people to give us the glory, not God. And then finally, like I said, there's people who don't say anything at all, don't share anything at all. They've made out that basically what Jesus does in your heart, in my heart, is private. It's not for anyone else to know about. We treat salvation from Jesus, some of us, like a visit to an embarrassing clinic. You know, you want to get out of town, you want to wear a mask, you know, whatever. You don't want people to know who you really are. We treat a relationship with Jesus like it's some secret affair that we don't want people to find out about. Those are all things that make this difficult. And so, not all that stuff is terribly bad. I mean, it's not wrong to talk about what Jesus has done in the lives of other people. It's certainly not wrong to talk about why we have a reason to believe what we believe. I mean, all those things aren't necessarily wrong in and of themselves, but they all kind of miss the mark of what Jesus wants us to do. And so we're going to look at a story this morning in Mark 5, verses 1 through 20, where we get to see a guy in a really bad situation get his life changed by Jesus, and then Jesus gets really practical on what it looks like to talk about that. And so I hope it helps you. It's really helped me. It's been a very good, helpful story for me to put some framework on how to do this better in my own life, and I hope it encourages you too. So let's read it. Mark 5, 1 through 20, the disciples, it says, they come to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes, and when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart. He broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. This is a situation that's going from really bad to really worse, right? The previous methods of trying to help this man were no longer working, and it's getting bad. Night and day, among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he was saying to the man, "Come out of him, you unclean spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, My name is Legion, for we are many. Now, if you're tracking with the story, this just went from bad to freaky, right? This is, I mean, I get goosebumps every time I read this part of the story. That would literally freak me out. And then this man, he begs him earnestly not to send him out of the country. Now, a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter them." So he, Jesus, gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who'd had the legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs, right? And they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who'd been possessed by the demons begged him that he might be with him. And he, Jesus, did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. So, before we get into the nuts and bolts of this and how practical it is and how helpful it is, we're going to first do what's most important. We're going to look at how great Jesus is, right? Because some of you here don't know Jesus, and you don't know him in a real personal way. And this is good for you to see this, because we're not just going to assume that you know Jesus. And Christianity is not about following practical steps. Christianity is about Jesus and how great Jesus is. And so this story, I mean, it's moving from a whole bunch of different angles. It's got a whole bunch of little stories kind of woven in there. You've got the story of this man, which is just super tragic and very sad. The story of these poor farmers who lost their pigs, their livelihood. What about the residents in this town? You know, for those of you who own a home, you know, kind of location, location, location. That's what you have to do when you buy a house. Imagine you bought a house and this is what was going on every night. Right? Every night you went to bed, and as you put your kids down, and as you tried to sleep yourself, all you could hear was this man screaming out in anguish, possessed by demons and cutting himself. Pretty crazy. There's a story of the demons who want to enter the pigs. I got nothing. I mean, nothing. I don't. That's crazy. And then you get Jesus, who's the greatest hero in this whole story. And so... we're going to take a few minutes and look at why what Jesus did here was so heroic. The first thing that happens is Jesus encounters this man. And I know that doesn't immediately sound like Jesus makes Jesus out to be a hero, but Jesus was this perfect, sinless Son of God, right? And we might imagine Jesus like this sort of monk, you know, living in a big chapel, kind of, you know, just all by himself, reading the Bible and singing in a language we can't understand all day long. And actually, that's not what we see when we look at Jesus. His ministry wasn't teaching in a Christian school, and they didn't go on the weekends to Christian conferences where he signed Bibles to everybody, and then he came home to his gated Christian community every night. If you read the Bible, for those of you who haven't read the Bible, if you read the Bible, every single page of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which tell us about Jesus' life and death and resurrection, every page showed Jesus encountering people whose circumstances had made them rejected by society. No one wanted anything to do with them except Jesus. Outlaws, criminals, prostitutes, lepers, demon-possessed people, on and on and on, immoral women. I mean, you can't read any page of any of the Gospels in the Bible and not see Jesus encountering people who everyone else hated. It's incredible. Now, you and I encounter, you know, people that may fit some of those descriptions, but we know the rules, right? The rules are when you see someone crazy, like on the street in some big city, you don't make eye contact. That's rule number one. You didn't go to the other side of the road if it's possible. If it's not, you turn the other way. You walk fast. Look behind you. He's still coming. Walk faster / run. If you're a lady, you hold your purse, right? If you met someone like this. If you're a guy, you might pretend that you have a gun in your jacket. That's what I think you do if you have a gun in your jacket. I mean, there's rules that we know how not to, like, how for this scenario not to escalate when you see someone who looks terrifying like this man would have looked. And Jesus didn't do any of those rules. He didn't just encounter this man. Jesus went on to engage this man, right? Jesus didn't run from the scenario, run from the problem. Jesus ran straight into it. He just jumps right into this scenario. And I'm telling you that because some of you might be here thinking there's this evil that's in me that no one wants to touch, no one wants to deal with. And I know if Jesus met me, he wouldn't want to be part of my life. And we're telling you this because this is what Jesus does. Jesus does this so many times in the Bible that we know this is not just a one-off event. This is part of his character. It's part of his nature. It's who Jesus is. And Jesus has brought you here this morning, if that's you, because he wants in on your pain. He wants in on that storm you're in, that tragic situation you're in right now. That's what Jesus does. He engages us right in the middle of our brokenness. Then Jesus goes on from encountering him and engaging him. Jesus goes on to deliver this man, right? Jesus could have responded with some tough love, like, not my problem, or you got yourself into this, you can get yourself out. And by the way, you know, what if Jesus got to the crowd and said, by the way, let this be a lesson to the rest of you, you know, don't play with Ouija boards, you're going to end up like this guy, right? Jesus doesn't do any of that. Jesus takes this power that he has, this authority that he has, and he uses it to set this man free. And what's so amazing is that while we think of Jesus as this kind of timid, sort of almost effeminate kind of man with like a robe on, you know, just loves children and playing with sheep, right? That's kind of what some of us think Jesus. Actually, just Jesus walking up to this demon-possessed man causes the legion of demons to like freak out in fear and terror. I mean, Jesus is terrifying the demons. That's pretty amazing. I mean, imagine you got tickets to like a great fight, epic battle of good versus evil, and it comes down to the main event. And right before they ring the bell or say, let's get it on, or whatever they say, right before that happens, one of the fighters jumps down on the ground and starts begging the other fighter, don't torment me. Don't torment me, right? I mean, you and I would want our money back because that's not what we paid to see. And this is the same kind of thing that happens here with Jesus. This is not a fight. This legion of demons, this terrifying scenario, Jesus walks up and they just jump on the ground. Don't torment us. Don't torment us. Jesus is incredibly strong. That's why I'm telling you that. Because if you're wondering if Jesus is strong enough for your situation, he's totally strong enough. It's just things you need to know about Jesus. And then the next thing that I love is that Jesus goes on to show that he values this man more than anyone else ever did. And that's easy part of the story to miss if you're not a pig farmer, right? These farmers lose 2,000 pigs. All right, we've done the math. Well, we think we've done the math. That's like $400,000 worth of pig. That's a lot of bacon, right? That's a whole lot of pig. And these pigs rush down and they drown in the sea, no doubt. There's probably a guy who looks like me who's standing there on the bank thinking to himself, it's got to be a way to salvage some of this, right? Get a rope, get a four-wheeler. Got to be able to get some of this out, right? Use it somehow. And I think, I mean, I've read the story a bunch, and what struck me was there's something missing in the story. What's missing, and maybe you caught this, what's missing is Jesus asking for permission to do this. I mean, to kill 2,000 pigs that belong to someone else, there's got to be a dead, you know, sea scroll version of this passage where Jesus says, time out to the legion of demons. Let me go have coffee with the pig farmers. Let me explain the scenario. I'm going to tell them that this guy is really strong. He breaks chains. He breaks shackles. He's very strong. And, you know, you're going to lose 2,000 pigs, but, you know, here's what we're going to do. We'll sign a contract. The pigs will die, but this man will work for you for the rest of his life. And you've got to have some use for him on the farm. He's so strong, right? There's got to be a passage where that somehow gets included. And there's not. Jesus doesn't go and ask for permission to do this. And does that strike anyone else as a little crazy, right? There's reasons why Jesus didn't do that. Number one, he's God and he owns everything. So he doesn't need their permission. He owns everything. So the second thing, though, is that, and this is really cool, is that Jesus has his priorities straight. If you and I were faced with this, you know, I don't know what decision you would make. I mean, if it was your pigs. I mean, we put value on the wrong stuff. Let's just take an example. What looks more valuable to you? This? That's all bacon, by the way. Now, I don't know if that's $400,000 worth of bacon, but I'd probably pay $400,000 for that, right? That's a lot of bacon. Is that more valuable, or is this? That's as close as I get to a naked crazy man, because I don't want to lose my job. But I'm pretty sure that guy works in our kids ministry or something. He was definitely here at the 9 o'clock. The thing is, if Jesus would have went around door to door and said, hey guys, here's what we need. We've got a thermometer. It says 2,000 pigs at the top. We need one pig from every person. If everyone just gives one pig, we'll make our way there. He would have got no pigs because no one wanted to save this guy. People didn't want to give anything towards him. They wanted him dead. He drove them nuts. But to Jesus, it was a no-brainer. This man was worth more than these pigs. No question. I don't have to ask anybody. I don't need to ask. This is such an easy decision from Jesus' standpoint. And the reason I'm telling you that is because you might be here thinking, I've wasted my life. No one would want to contribute anything towards me being set free. We're going to talk about that towards the end, and you're going to be amazed at how far Jesus goes for that. And the last thing Jesus does is even more surprising. Jesus commissions this man. He gives him a role to play. He lets him do something. Jesus doesn't just say, you just try real hard to be clean and, don't listen to terrible music and keep yourself out of trouble. Or Jesus doesn't say, hey, I got the ball rolling. I'll see you on the other side. Good luck. Fingers crossed. You'll see a light at the end of the tunnel. Jesus gives this guy a role to play. He empowers him. He commissions him. It's pretty amazing how great Jesus is. And then we move on to what Jesus tells this man to do. I think it's important to just remember that Jesus, what he wants this man to do is what he wants all of us to do. None of us get to encounter him, have our lives changed by him without him giving us mission. And so let's take a look at the last few verses here. The first thing that happens is that Jesus turns down this guy's first idea for ministry. Which is a little kind of, it's a hard pill to swallow. The guy wants to get in the boat with Jesus, and I'm thinking as a pastor, that sounds like a great idea. I mean, surely these guys are bad influence on him. They seem to be pretty screwed up. No one really cares about him here. Here's Jesus. He could go on ministry. Part of Jesus' ministry was casting out demons, and certainly a man of this caliber could be used. Right? He might be able to help us think through potential demons that were all talk, or this one's really good, or what. I mean, he might be really useful on the way. And I think why Jesus, well, there's a couple reasons why, but I think one of the reasons why Jesus doesn't let him get in the boat is because that would make this man, he would be escaping his world. He'd be running away from a really great opportunity. And a lot of times we do this. A lot of times we run away from difficulty and we blame it on God. We do that. We get saved or something, and we just run away from everyone else who knew us, and we blame it on God. And actually, it leaves this huge void where people don't get to see this change in our life. And so Jesus doesn't let him do that. Jesus takes his kind of idea, and he doesn't reject him. Jesus just redirects him and tells him this. He says, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go home. And that word go is to go under authority. Jesus is essentially commissioning him as an ambassador for him. It's like knighting him. It's giving him authority and saying, you're going under my authority and you're going home. And home wasn't a house. It's not four walls. Jesus isn't saying, go home, just play Halo and, try not to look at porn and I'll be back soon. We make Christianity to be that. Let's just try real hard to be good. Jesus will be back one day. No, he says, go with my authority home. And home is where his family lived. It's an inhabited place. Go to your family. And Jesus says, to your friends, go to your family and to your friends. Go home under my authority. You're now clothed. You're in your right mind. Go home to your friends and your family. And I think it's just worthwhile to pause there and acknowledge the fact that that's hard to do. It's hard to go back to the people who knew you, changed by Jesus. It's much easier to go on a mission trip somewhere. I did this a lot. I used to go on these mission trips, and I would have so much patience for everybody, and no one knew what I used to be like, and so I had this clean slate, and I could pretend to be this just great guy and all the rest, but it was much tougher for me to live that out around my friends and family who'd known me my whole life. That's hard to do. Jesus says, that's what I want you to do. You're not running away from all these people and all this pain. You're going to run into it. You're going to go home to your friends, to your family. And then Jesus said, I want you to tell them what happened to you. Not what happened to somebody else. Not four spiritual laws. Not some apologetics lesson. I want you to tell them what happened to you. This whole crowd had gathered, right? His possession of demons had happened in as public of a way as possible. People had gone to sleep for possibly years hearing him scream. They could see the cuts all over his body from cutting himself from these stones. He said, I want you to go and I want you to tell these people what's happened to you. See, it's what Jesus does for you and I is personal, but it's not private. I think we mix those two up. I think a lot of times we take that Jesus, he does meet us where we are and does love us and minister to us personally, but it's not something that's meant to happen in isolation and seclusion. Let me just step back from this and give you an analogy that may help make sense. Imagine, for you ladies that are here, imagine a guy says he wants to marry you, right? But then right as he gets down his knees, he proposes, and you're like, oh my gosh, just stay right there. I want to take a picture of this. This is going on Instagram. This is going to be amazing. He goes, whoa, 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 whoa. Baby, 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 baby. This is our love. It's our precious little love. And you know what? No one needs to know about our love. It's our love. No one needs to know our special love for each other. And you're like, well, just let me at least put it on Facebook, status update. I'm moving from, you know, from single to engaged. No. See, no one, you know, and then we can just go out of town and we'll go to a courthouse where no one knows us, and you can wear your wedding ring at home. But no one really, I mean, imagine this scenario, right? We would tell you to run away. And if you're coincidentally somehow in that situation right now, we'd like to tell you, run away. There'll be a special about this man on Dateline in a couple of years, but you don't have to be one of those ladies, right? The reality is something would be really, really wrong, because if he really loves you and he's really committed to you and he really wants to like give his life to you and share life with you, he should want the whole world to know about it. But I wonder why we make it so different with Jesus. Oh yeah, Jesus saved me. Oh yeah, Jesus loves me. Oh yeah, I'm living for Jesus. I want to spend eternity with Jesus. I just don't want anybody to find out. See how weird that is? It's weird. It's not right. Something's wrong. We're not meant to have private encounters with Jesus that no one else finds out about, where he sets us free and he saves us and he changes us, but nobody else has to know. And if asked, we just tell everybody, oh, we just cleaned our life up. And then he adds, he says, tell them what the Lord has done for you. Don't take credit for it, Jesus says. We live in a world where everyone wants to take credit for everything good that's happening in their life. He said, don't do that. Tell them I did it. I'm the Lord, I did it for you. And then he concludes that Jesus says, tell them how I had mercy on you. That's powerful. This guy was a terror that no doubt this town wanted. They wanted him put out of his misery, shot like a rabid dog. Jesus was the only one who loved this guy and valued this guy. Jesus stepped in. He didn't kill him. He didn't put him out of his misery. He delivered him from his misery. Jesus did the unthinkable. He sacrificed a fortune of pigs to set this man free. Jesus intervened. Jesus had mercy on him. And when you and I, when we tell our story, when we talk about what Jesus has done for us, and we make sure that we add that we needed mercy or that we got mercy, it makes the story really powerful, right? Because all of a sudden, we don't look good anymore. To say you needed mercy or that you got mercy, I mean, that's a pretty powerful thing. Mercy means pity. You're admitting that you're pitiful. That you were pitiful. And that's what we've been learning in Ephesians for you guys who've been with us, is that we were dead. We were completely in sin. We were enemies of God. There was hostility between us and God. There was no chance that we could ever be anything righteous or anything good, that we could never make God happy, ever, ever, ever. But God had mercy on us. God pitied us. God loved us. It makes Jesus to be the hero. But when you tell the story and you conveniently leave out, and I conveniently leave out, that I'm a mess, that I was a mess and still am a mess and needed mercy and still need mercy, when we leave that out, we basically aren't telling the true story. Jesus said, I want people to know that I had mercy on you. And the littlest ways that you and I can do this can be really powerful. You know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, I was possessed by a legion of demons. It can be, but it doesn't always have to be that. Let me tell you how powerful this is when you tell people how God is having mercy on you. Let me give you some examples. You might tell your, you might have a great conversation with someone. And, well, tell me, what does it mean for you to be a Christian? You might say something like this. You know what? Recently, I've noticed that I've just been eat up with envy of everybody else in my neighborhood. I drive in, you know, they got a boat I don't have. They've got, you know, this grass. Their grass is green. Mine's all brown and patchy. Or they got this car that I really want. I see their, you know, them with their spouse in the yard playing with their kids. They look happy. I don't think we're happy like them. You know, they've got a bigger house than me. I mean, you just eat up with envy, and you just say, you know what Jesus has just been doing for me lately, just causing me to see that He is my treasure, and that He is so good, that He loves me so much, and that He gave me the exact house and the exact family and the exact spouse that I needed. And that He is helping me right there. And that all this is so good. This is exactly what I need. And that He loves me. And that ultimately, you know, He's this inheritance that awaits me is so much greater than anything I could even have on this earth. He's just helping me. That's powerful. Or you might say, you know what? My spouse and I, we've been having a rough time. And you know what Jesus has been doing? He's been showing me that He loves me so much. And I'm a mess. I'm just a piece of work. I'm really hard to love. I'm really inconsistent, but Jesus loves me. And I'm up and I'm down and up and I'm down, but He still loves me and He's committed Himself to me. And you know what? Jesus is helping me see that even though my marriage is going through a tough time right now, that I'm to love my spouse like He loves me. And that just gives me such patience and causes me to be gracious when I don't want to be, and just helps me. Do you know how much better that is than, hey, I saw something on TV about a guy who had a drug problem and, you know, he got saved and he's all better now. I mean, that's fine, but it's not as powerful as, you know what? Jesus is helping me. I've met Jesus, and he's helping me. He's having mercy on me. He's doing something for me. So finally, this guy, we see how he responds, and he doesn't respond as we might imagine. He doesn't sort of, you know, mope off and storm off and act like Eeyore, and I had a ministry, and Jesus shut my ministry down, and I felt led to get in the boat with Jesus, and Jesus wouldn't let me do my ministry. I mean, that's so dumb. When we act like that, he goes off and he begins to proclaim this. That's an announcement, but it's not like general news, like, you know, and in sports and in the weather it's not like that kind of announcement. It's connected to a context. He's the man who this happened to, and he's saying, he's not coming to say, you know, in fact, God, Jesus can set you free from demons. And in fact, he's saying, no, I was possessed by demons and Jesus set me free. I mean, just imagine the tears streaming down his face. Remember me? I was the naked, bloody, demon-possessed man. I kept you awake at night with my screams. Jesus set me free. He proclaims this everywhere he goes. And the result is just pretty obvious. Everyone marvels. You know, no one's left with, well, if that's true for you, it's not true for me. I mean, that whole thing. You know, people could literally see his life had changed. It wasn't a it's true for you, it's not true for me thing. It was like, well, certainly something happened. They were amazed. They were undone. They some of them were in awe and speculation and suspicion and, this is probably just an overnight thing. You're going to go right back. I mean, who knows what they were all thinking? It doesn't say that all of them came forward and responded to an altar call, but it does say that everyone was blown away. And I think that when we tell our story, what the Lord has done for us, how He's had mercy on us, and we expose that we're pitiful, that we're rotten, that we're a wreck, that we needed Jesus, and that He's having mercy on us, and He's changing us, when you and I do that, it eliminates the if it's true for you, true for me thing. I mean, they can see something's happening. Whether they come to Jesus or not, that's not up to you and I. So Jesus wants us to tell the story that it's his story, that he's the hero. He takes the initiative. He wants us to tell the story of what he did for us. It's not generic. It's not just facts. It's real. This is what happened to us. That it's a story of mercy, that we needed pity. We didn't need good advice. We needed pity. I'm pitiful. I know that you might envy me or my house or my marriage or anything else I have, but I want you to know I'm pitiful, that I needed Jesus to save me. That's what Jesus wants you and I to do. And so let me give us a couple possible ways to respond this morning. Maybe you're here and you don't have that story. Maybe you have, I went to church, or my grandma was a great Christian, or, you know, my uncle translated, you know, Bibles in another language. Maybe you got something like that, but you don't have a, man, I met Jesus and he had mercy on me story. I want to tell you that nothing replaces that. Not perfect attendance at church, not giving a whole bunch of money to church, not doing great things for Jesus. Nothing replaces, I met Jesus and he had mercy on me. And if you're here this morning, that's where you're at. We don't want you to move on to, here's the top five steps to living a better life now. We want you just to realize, man, that Jesus, he's brought you here because he wants to have mercy on you. He wants to encounter you and engage you right where you're at. He knows the mess you're in. He wants to deliver you. He wants to value you and show you how much he loves you. He wants to ultimately commission you and use you. I mean, this guy wasn't put through 10 years of Bible college before Jesus let him do something. I mean, he went right out and got right at it. Jesus wants to do that, but the first thing that you need to do is not try to figure all that out. You just need to do what this guy did. You just need to run to Jesus. That's all this guy did. I mean, ultimately, he's the hero in the story. Outside of Jesus, he's the only guy who did anything right. He ran and fell down at Jesus' feet. And Jesus said in Matthew 11, he says, come to me, all who are weary, all who are heavy laden, heavily burdened, and I'll give you rest. And so if that's you this morning, we want to pray with you because Jesus wants you here so he can deliver you, so he can engage you and set you free. Finally, we'll circle back on this crowd because they're an interesting group of people too. These guys totally missed the headlines, right? I mean, they were told, this is what it said, they were told about what happened to the man and the pigs. They were given the information, just as you and I have been given the information. And what they walked away from, what the crowd walked away with was headlines, pigs died. If they were telling the story, that's the story they were telling. You know what happened? A bunch of pigs died. The headline was not, man set free. Unbelievable. Big news, read all about it. Demon-possessed man set free. That wasn't the headline for them. The headline was, pigs died. Who's going to pay for these pigs? Subheadline. Jesus causes big mess. You know, town votes for him to leave. And nobody wants to be that crowd. I don't want to be the crowd. You don't want to be the crowd, but sometimes we are the crowd. Sometimes we let the mess that Jesus causes when he shows up outweigh the mission, right? Sometimes we get preoccupied on the wrong things. Headline might be no parking, or headline might be kids ministry didn't have room for my kid, or headline might be crazy looking person took my seat, or, you know, whatever it is. Headline might be, why do they want us to give money? A little less funny. If you're a visitor, relax, we don't want your money. But if you're part of this church, you know what's here's the reason why we give. We give because God's so good and his mission is so big. And there's a lot of people in this city who don't know Jesus, and all the other cities around us who don't know Jesus, and we're flat out on a mission for those people to know about Jesus. And you know what? Sometimes that costs money. So if that's what you're hung up on, maybe you're just missing the mission, right? I mean, these pig farmers could have gone out and told this story. We lost our pigs, but you know what happened? A man got set free. Jesus used our silly pigs to set a man free. Can you believe it? Jesus used my money to see a church planted. Can you believe it? It was just money just sitting there in a bank, and Jesus used it. See how we missed the headlines? So, those guys didn't need to, you know, start rah, 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 we're so excited for this guy. They needed to do exactly what he did. They needed to realize they needed mercy from Jesus. They need to beg Jesus to have mercy on them, to change their heart, to change their life. That would have led to the headline being straight, but it starts in your heart. And so if that's you this morning, I want to invite you as you come and respond, and we just talk about communion here for a second. I want you to come and say, Jesus, remind me that I needed your pity. Not past tense, but I need it right now. I need your broken body and your shed blood. And I help, Jesus, help me focus on you changing people's lives, not on the mess that might cause me. We want to be involved in the mess. You know, Jill used to be a labor and delivery nurse when we first got married. And as a good husband, I did what all good husbands want to do. We want to talk to our wives after work. How was your day? What happened? Da, 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 da. Well, that would always happen around dinner time because she got off at 7 and I would cook dinner. And I'm making myself out to look good so I can make myself look really bad here in a second. So one night I asked her, how was your day? How was your day at work? Tell me what happened. P.S., why are you wearing a different set of scrubs than you started off with? Well, I won't tell you, but the story was disgusting. That's how she, stuff was all over her. That's why she had to change scrubs. And I found myself thinking, I can't believe I just kissed you. And I don't want to eat now, ever again. But the reality was that what she was involved with was babies being born. And that's a messy event. Right, dads? It's messy because it's full of life. And where there's life, there's mess. Life's messy. And we don't ever want to ask Jesus to leave. You know, let's have a clean, sanitized church. No, we want mess because mess is where life is. And people are messy. I'm messy. You're messy. But there's new life happening, and that's what we get excited about. So as the band comes up and we just consider how we take communion this morning, you know what? This is for Christians only. And let me explain it to you. This is not us coming and having a snack before lunch or whatever if you're new to Jesus. This is like a huge deal for Christians, right? Let's circle back to the story and let's just think one more thing. Imagine Jesus overhearing this crowd decide that the pigs were more important than this man's life. Imagine that. Imagine what Jesus must have been thinking. You know, and just around the corner here, you know what's going to happen. It's not going to be a pig that dies on a cross. It's not going to be me giving up my livelihood. It's going to be me giving my life. And some of us, we get caught up in wishing we had somebody's crazy story. I wish I had a story where pigs died and demons were. And you know what got so much better than that? The sinless Son of God died for you and I. It doesn't get better than that. The story doesn't get bigger than that. Because of the cross, each and every one of us have a story that's phenomenal. We, like this man, we're in bondage to sin and death. It wasn't demons that awaited us. It was hell itself. And Jesus set us free. And if you're here and you're going, I don't know if I'm valuable. I don't know if anyone would value anything for me. The sinless Son of God spilt his precious blood for you. It doesn't get more valuable than that. Every one of us have an incredible story to tell. We met the Lord. He had mercy on us. And so if you're here and you're going, that's crazy, I don't believe it, that's fine. We understand. We're really glad you were here. Just don't come up and take communion because it's a big deal for us. Because this is when we come and remember Jesus, whose body was broken, whose blood was shed. If you're here and you're a Christian, this is when you come and say, Jesus, remind me again that I needed pity, that I need pity, and help me respond like this man did and tell people that you had mercy on me. And God, I pray that it would lead to that. I pray that this summer, a whole ton of people at a cookout at my house would marvel as they hear that the Lord has changed me. Let something like this happen to me in my neighborhood, in my, God, use me like you use this man. That's what we're doing for Christians, and we're coming to taking communion today. And then for those of you who aren't yet Christians but are going, gosh, that's a different Jesus than I imagined. I want in on that. Man, we want to pray for you and come around you and encourage you and tell you that Jesus brought you here because he wants to encounter you and engage you right in the middle of your mess and your sin and your pain and deliver you and heal you, show you the value that he places on you. He makes us sons and daughters. It's incredible how he values us, guys. And he wants to commission you and use you. As crazy as that sounds to you right this second, he wants to use you and that mess that you're in to bring him glory. So let's stand together and I'm going to pray for us.